Well, we got a good UFC card coming up this weekend. It's UFC. Is it 226?
263.
263, bro. Forgive me. I am
just throwing out numbers again.
Well, I had a friend. I had a friend, and he texted me a picture of these cookies, and he said, these cookies are too strong. Do you want them?
Who are you to wave your finger? You must have been out your hair. I hold deep in muddy waters. You practically raised the dead. Rob the grave to snow the cradle, then burn the evidence down. Soapbox house of cards and glass, so don't go tossing your stones around. You must have been.
What is up? Good evening. You are listening to another episode of Taking the Over with Billy Gunn. I am your host, the one and only Billy Gunn, on this, the official sports wagering podcast of the Dome Patrol United Podcast Network. And this week, we've got a special guest on the show, mystery guest to some, not a mystery guest to others. He is on a podcast on one of our other podcasts on the feed, actually the BS and Beer podcast. Wesley from the BS and Beer podcast is kind enough to join me today. And what I'm really excited about having Wesley on for is the BS and Beer guys are like, they know their shit. I feel like guys like me just kind of make it up as we go along or rely on some type of non-statistical just instinct. BS and Beer guys are on top of it. Like, it's good analysis from informed people, and that is fucking rare in Saints media land. So, Wesley, what's up, man? I'm so excited to have you here on the pod. Welcome to Taking the Over.
Thanks, Billy Gunn. Appreciate it. It's nice to be over here. And me and you like talking on the side about some gambling and things like that. And so it's nice to be here and talk about a few different things during the offseason.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's like, to have another guy on the network that's into wagering and into UFC, and is knowledgeable about both things is very exciting to me. And so, I'm excited to have you on, so that we can talk about UFC, and we've got an awesome fight card coming up on Saturday night. And I hope that I plan on having this pod published no later than Friday morning. But I've noticed a fun trend when you have a podcast dedicated to sports gambling, Wesley, is the number of people that will listen to your show. Like, let's say, for example, during a football season, during NFL season, after Sunday, they'll listen on Monday and Tuesday to see how your picks went. It's like there's a bump in listen. It's like people come back to hear you get shit wrong. I love that. It's one of my favorite things. You get that Monday, Tuesday bump of people going, let me listen to this motherfucker get some shit wrong. So it's time sensitive information. That's good for Saturday night. I look forward to all of the downloads that come after Saturday night when people can verify. I can only speak for myself just how wrong I'm going to be.
True. I can be wrong right there with you. And hopefully we get lots of Twitter feedback of people telling us that we're stupid.
Dude, what's your podcast background? How long have you been into podcasting?
I think I've been with Dave and them. I think it's the third season this past year. Just kind of started as a thing on Saints Report with chatting with Dave, and then Dave and I became friends and got to, we were talking on the phone all the time. And it was just one of those things that kind of progressed over time, is that we were both sharing good thoughts, and we kind of get into deeper conversations than we heard a lot of times. And we're like, you know what, like, we enjoy this conversation. He asked me if I'd start to kind of adding into the podcast every once in a while. So it was something I kind of did sporadically. And kind of, I think this last year was on just about every single one of them that we did. So it's increased over the last couple of years. But I really enjoy it. I enjoy talking you know, sports with anybody, but specifically, you know, Saints and UFC. I enjoy having higher level conversations and trying to really dig into things. Like, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that don't, and there's a lot of things that you listen to out there that everybody's saying the same thing a different way. I like to have an opinion. I'm okay with being wrong when I put my opinion out there. I think way too many people are safe without necessarily committing to things and being okay taking a risk and being wrong.
Oh, we're going to take some risks. We're going to take some risks. But in fact, my recommendation this week, when we get to it, this is going to be the greatest tip that I've ever given out on this show. This is going to be the single most profitable, best gambling advice I've ever given out. We're like 28 or 29 episodes in. I don't even know.
What's the 1-900 number I have to call to get this information?
No, they're gonna. It's gonna be free.
It's free. Oh my goodness.
It's free. It's just for being an overtaker. You know, all my overtakers out there like to get the free picks, man. Dude, I've got some listeners. We talk on Twitter, and kind of like DM and stuff. Dude, I got some. There's some motherfuckers that can hit some bets out there.
Yeah,
like I'm asking other people for it. Like, I'm like, what you got on the baseball game, dude? There's some good. I got some sharp, lucky motherfuckers that tune in. So I'm excited about that. Hopefully we can hit them with the big plus 400 winner this evening. So let's jump right into it. Let's get into UFC. So, dude, my UFC fandom goes back to, like, I remember the UFC with Hoyce Gracie. Yep. You know, no weight classes, no time limits, just the ridiculous. Like, we used to go to, like, the, not even like the Blockbuster, like the independent family owned video store, and get those videos when I was in high school, you know, because at that time, I think they were just a couple years old. And remember being a fan of UFC. And then when the UFC really took hold after that Stefan Bonner, Bonner and fucking Griffin fight. Yep. Oh my God. I mean, and I remember I was in grad school when that happened, and it was like showing my friends, like, we have to watch this fight. And it was, and that was the reemergence of the UFC, you know. And I've watched WEC over the years. I enjoyed the lower weight classes. And then when UFC absorbed WEC, that was great. Strikeforce. I mean, I like the indie promotions too. We could actually, Affliction. Oh my God. I bought that goddamn, Fedor was supposed to fight. Yep. Was it Josh? Shit.
Josh Barnett.
And they did Josh Barnett.
Josh Barnett single-handedly ruined Affliction.
Yes.
Made it to where the UFC could purchase them.
By that night.
Being able to fight Fedor.
Motherfucker. Yeah. I bought it. And that was big money. That was like $50. I was poor, you know.
I had friends that had the illegal cable box back in the day that we, like, I remember watching the Tyson Holyfield fight where he bit his ear at a friend's house, and they were over there watching some fights, and we watched UFC 3 live, which is the one where Hoyce triangled Dan Severn, and with watching it, had no idea what he did. I mean, like, didn't know anything about jiu-jitsu and all. Within a year later, I was in college, and a few friends of mine in my fraternity found a jiu-jitsu gym that we all joined and started getting into jiu-jitsu. And that was in 1997, the fall of 97. I started jiu-jitsu.
So you've been training jiu-jitsu since 97.
So I started in 97, trained for a few years. I had some medical issues. I've had a total hip replacement, so I took most of about 16 years off of jiu-jitsu. And then started training again seriously a year and a half ago.
Dude, that's awesome.
But what's funny, in 1997, the gym that I happened to walk into, that me and three of my friends were four of the 15 first students he ever had at his first gym, but went on to be Travis Luter. Before was Travis Luter, it was when he was a wrestler doing jiu-jitsu. So I've been going to UFCs forever. When the UFC first started a website back in the day, it was the UFC Fight Club. I was one of the first moderators of the UFC Fight Club website. So I've been to a bunch of UFCs that the UFC has given me free tickets to. I've gotten to meet a bunch of the fighters and Dana White a bunch of times. And I've gotten some cool experiences with UFCs and stuff like that over the years. And I mean, even as much as last year was still going. So still travel and go to fights in Vegas and all. But I've been at some of the biggest fights in UFC history and had some cool times being at Randy Couture fights and Conor McGregor fights and stuff like that.
Who's your favorite fighter of all time?
Man, so my favorite fighter of all time is BJ Penn.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Tough for me to look back on now because I'm so mad at him for never. I mean, he's obviously what he's done since retirement. He's not a great person and all.
Right.
But some of the cool stuff that he did. Again, for my love of jiu-jitsu, with somebody who got their black belt in jiu-jitsu in 3.5 years and won the mundials after only training for 3 years. It's super impressive. Nobody else has ever has or ever will do what he did in the world of jiu-jitsu.
He trained for 3 years and he went world class.
He was, won world championships of 3.5 years. I mean, and what he did is ridiculous, but I'm a big fan. I've had some cool experiences with Randy Couture. I was a big fan of his for his career and all. I will admit to being a huge Holly Holm fan.
She's good.
I like her. Her knockout of Ronda is one of my just favorite MMA moments in history.
Her Ronda knockout was fantastic. I gotta tell you, I almost feel like a lot of the Ronda knockouts. I mean, when she got the lioness.
Yep. Oh yeah. I was at the fight where the lioness beat Miesha Tate. That was UFC 200 where she beat her for the title, which I'm just throwing that in. I'm excited about Miesha Tate's comeback. I think she might be pretty dang serious. She took a lot of time off, but she posted some stuff today. She is in shape and she's still 5 weeks out.
Well, we got a good UFC card coming up this weekend. UFC, is it 226?
263.
263, bro, forgive me, I am.
You're just throwing out numbers, Gunn.
Well, I had a friend, and he texted me a picture of these cookies. And he said, these cookies are too strong. Do you want them? And I said, yeah. And so there was four of them. And I took one, and I was like, man, that's a bad number. Let me take two.
I don't feel it.
Yeah, no. I'm not a rookie. No. This was early. I knew it wasn't time yet, but I was like, let's take two, And then after taking two, I was like, I should have just taken one. So if I say UFC 226, of course I meant 263.
Okay. Got it. I'm in.
Figueiredo versus Mourinho 2. You got Stylebender and Vettori 2. You got Nate Diaz and Leon Edwards in a 5-round. I guess that technically makes it a co-main, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Starting at the top, man. Let's talk about Figueiredo versus Mourinho. Now, of course, it was a majority draw last time, and it could be said that Figueiredo controlled that fight. It was an epic fight, a 5-rounder, just arguably could have been fight of the year.
Yeah.
There was a low blow from Mourinho from Figueiredo, that if you take that away, he wins the fight on everybody's scorecard, but one judge. And so, Figueiredo is the betting favorite at minus 225 as of this afternoon, and Mourinho's plus 175. Everybody's thinking Figueiredo's just going to do this again, right?
Well, I mean, let's not forget last time when they fought, Figueiredo had fought 3 weeks or 21 days earlier, quickest turnaround in UFC championship history.
Mourinho had fought recently, too. Correct. Yeah. Maybe a week or two before that. No, it was an amazing 21-day turnaround. And that was so cool. I mean, those guys, we needed that during the pandemic time. That was awesome. Guys that fought a lot and made, like Kevin Holland's another one that comes to mind. Like, he made some hay fighting during the pandemic. yeah. you know, fighting 5-6 times a year. It was cool to see the quick turnaround. I mean, he was ready. I mean, obviously both guys have had a longer layoff for this fight. Do you think that has an impact on the outcome?
Yeah, I mean, I think Figueiredo will definitely be a little fresher. I like Moreno a lot. I think Figueiredo is an absolute killer. I think that it was probably I think would have been like the perfect situation for Moreno to get the upset, as he fought probably the best fight of his career. And Figueiredo, I mean, probably had I don't say lowest volume because they had a ton of strikes, but, was probably the most compromised he's ever been with that 3-week turnaround. And I just think that a fresh Figueiredo is going to be even better this time.
Yeah. And I mean, as you look across the UFC championship landscape, so Figueiredo is your flyweight champion. Oliveira is your lightweight champion. It's funny. I think you and I said the exact same thing while we were watching the Oliveira fight a few weeks back. And I mean, it was like your boy didn't have to go to the ground with him.
No.
Like, just let him get up, finish him in the first round.
I mean, fights like that. I mean, and I get it, but it's so frustrating. Even like, I didn't care who won that fight. I like both of them. But when you have somebody who, I mean, seriously, like puts their career back a year and a half. I mean, that guy's the champion. Chandler's the champion if he just stands up.
Mm-hmm. Let's just stand up, finish him.
I mean, that's millions of. I mean, you just watch somebody. Like, I don't dislike either one of them. So watching one of them make just a fatal career mistake right in front of you, it's so obvious.
I shared some of your pain because I had money. I had an investment.
You did.
In Chandler.
You did have the Chandler. That's right.
That was, and then Oliveira, to his credit,
that's as bad as like when you lose your parlay on a split decision. And you're just there was a path here.
Yeah. You got Mackenzie Dern as the women's strawweight champion. That's God bless. She's ascended that mountain. Kevin Holland at middleweight. What am I looking at?
Are you looking at? No, oh my Mackenzie God. Dern's not the champion.
I'm looking at UFC 256.
Did that happen at UFC 226?
That happened at 256.
How big were these cookies?
They were small cookies, but they got a lot. All right. So it sounds like you're taking Figueiredo. Sounds like Figueiredo would be your pick. I don't see a reason to disagree with you. You know, minus 225 is not necessarily great odds. You know, I'm gonna spread a little money on this card, but I'm not gonna spread it there. This fight may not go the distance. I mean, I feel like Figueiredo might come out even more impressive. You know, but so I'm not too comfortable betting the over-under on the rounds either. Next big fight on that card is going to be the last stylebender, Israel Adesanya versus Vettori, the Italian. You know, you and I, kind of an outtake from another pod, when left to our own devices, immediately started talking about UFC gambling. And I said, if you can get Adesanya in the neighborhood of minus 250,
yep,
you're in luck. Do that all day. And what's funny is I've watched this line throughout the week. I have a UFC betting rule that I stick to. I like to wait till after the weigh-ins.
Okay.
Before I start placing money, because nothing will piss you off more than a guy's opponent coming in 5 pounds overweight. I'm just going, fuck 70% of my card. I'm winning.
Yeah,
for sure. And you've already placed the bet on the other guy. I mean, you just never know. Or the fight doesn't go off. I don't like wrapping up parlays and that when, you know, you mentioned split decision victories. Parlays suck when it gets nuked because a guy doesn't make weight. And that just is no longer a parlay. You got to go do that all over again. Adesanya is currently minus 275. You could have got him at minus 240 earlier in the week.
Yep.
And we're recording there. I don't see any information on weigh-ins has come across my desk yet, but I think those are happening this evening. Vettori at plus 210. I mean, this is also a rematch.
Yeah.
Who do you think? Did you, of course, you probably watched the first Vittori Adesanya fight, right?
Yeah. That's, I mean, that's a tough fight to watch. And like, I mean, it's one of those that you reflect back on it without watching it. You're like, oh, okay, Adesanya, that was just part of his run. You can give that fight to Vittori.
You can give the fight to Vittori. You can
definitely like without disliking Adesanya, you can give that fight to Vittori. I mean, you're talking about what would that be? That'd be six wins in a row for Vittori. And I mean, no telling. I mean, their careers could have flip flopped real easy right there. It's an interesting fight because I think, you know, Vittori, if he can survive the damage that Adesanya is going to put out, Vittori's probably going to fight the prettier fight. And I mean, like points wise, but can he make it to round? To the judges' scorecards. I don't know if he can finish Adesanya. I don't know if he has the power to do that. But I think that he can chase Adesanya and move him around. I think he can connect enough to win a decision. I just think if this fight gets finished, it's Adesanya finishing Vittori.
Wow. Yeah. I think this fight's a decision. But I don't know who's going to win. And I got to tell you, admittedly, you know, like I'm a Stylebender mark. You know, I love Stylebender. I think he's awesome. He's been anointed, dude. He's got a little bit of the Rousey treatment. I mean, they gave him that fight with Silva. They gave him that fight with a legend. You know, his last fight, admittedly, he moved up to 205 pounds. And I listened to him in interviews that week prior to the Jan fight. And it was like, he seemed confident that the size wasn't going to be an issue. And then he just got smothered for five rounds.
Oh yeah. That was
by a big 205er. And so now that he's back, you know, now that he's back at 185, it's just, I'm gun shy, dude. You know, like I'm not as confident as I was earlier in the week. I went back and rewatched the Vittori fight, and you could say Vittori won that fight.
Yes.
And I don't know. I'm interested to hear your take, because honestly, I've realized that as a trend and as a reality of UFC, and I'm not even pointing the finger at anybody. I don't even know where you would point the blame, but I've learned, and I've actually started to apply it in a positive way to gambling. There are some decisions that are going to the fighter that's better for the narrative, the fighter that's better for the script,
yeah,
the fighter that's better for money sometimes in these decisions. And so you could see this, what seems like, just like you mentioned earlier, just another fight on the way up for Stylebender when he fought Vittori the first time. And so it's easy not to look too closely at that fight. But even people that saw it back then were saying,
yeah,
Vittori won this fight. You know?
Yeah, but Vittori, if he lets Adesanya stay at distance, he's going to be in trouble. But Vittori did a good job in the first fight of just getting underneath that and pressuring and moving to stuff. Like I really thought that that he fought a great fight. And I mean, I'm really interested to see how it goes in this one. I'm a big Adesanya fan. I've liked him from the beginning. He bothered me when he started way too early throwing out John Jones' name. I thought that was a huge mistake. That was a huge size difference. I mean, he's not a huge 185. For him to talk about going up and fighting a huge 205, even if he's not a big guy, there's a 20-pound difference. That's significant. And when you're talking about some of those 205 guys that are cutting from 225 to 230, that's a big difference. And we saw that. That's what can happen there.
Well, it's like, and it's funny. Yeah, he did call out John Jones. And that would have been that if John Jones, depending on what kind of state John Jones was in, were to have fought him, that wouldn't have been good for Stylebender.
No.
You know, but Stylebender's one of those guys that he's so charismatic. He delivers such a good promo. He is so good in interviews, so smart. Like he's a really fucking cool guy. And sometimes I think we lean into guys like that a little too much. For sure. You know? I mean, I said earlier in the week, if I can get this at minus 250, I'm in. I don't I don't feel comfortable at minus 275. You know. And then you look at Vettori at plus 210. And it's like, is this the play?
Yeah, I mean, are they setting us up? I think that if you're even considering like this one going back and forth, I think you've got to not watch the first fight again. It was a long time ago, and I think that if you watch the first fight too many times, it's in our brain to start figuring out what the judges did wrong and that the decision was wrong, and you're going to end up being a big Vettori fan going into this next fight by the time we get there on Saturday.
I've only rewatched it once. I will not rewatch it again.
You're gonna watch. If you watch it two more times, you're gonna put everything on Vettori. Like he's gonna do it this time,
bro. Sometimes I feel like to city people I'm country, but to country people I'm city. You know, it's a weird place to be. You know what I mean? That's how I feel in this fight. I'm like, nah, I'm gonna stay away from that one.
It's a tough one, and I mean, I'm sure you've talked about before. I mean, it's the big difference with MMA is you a lot of times this smart bet is on the guy that you actually don't think is going to win,
right?
Because of just the way the numbers make sense. It's not literally who you think's going to win and how you think they're going to win. I mean, it's those odds make a huge difference, and it's so different in MMA than other sports.
Really, it is. I mean, it's like I feel like. The odds makers lose some of an edge with this sport, and the only weapon they have in their holster is the line, you know, is the money line and the odds themselves. They can't do points, you know. And I've got all these wild theories about how these guys are so damn accurate. UFC doesn't allow for that, really doesn't, you know. The co-main. This is the fight that I am most excited about.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts.
This is my favorite fight of the night. This is the one I'm getting invested in. My man, Nate Diaz. Wesley, when's the last time Nate Diaz fought?
I don't.
2019.
Has it been 2 years? Okay. Yeah. Masvidal in November 2019.
That's right. He lost.
He did. The BMF belt. The Rock put it on Masvidal.
That was a 5-rounder as well. No, that was a 3-rounder. They only got a 3-rounder for the BMF belt, and this one there's no BMF belt, and it's 5 rounds.
He finished in round 2, though, right?
It was ruled a TKO 0 minutes into round 3.
That's what. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was ruled, which as a Diaz fan. That's a hell of a way to lose.
Yep.
When Diaz comes out, I'm a big fan of Diaz brothers, obviously. For those of you that aren't that familiar with MMA or wondering why I'm such a big fan of the Diaz brothers. Diaz brothers, it's Nick and Nate Diaz. Nate is actually...
Is he the friend that called and offered you the cookie?
No, they would have had them cookies and then they would have gone and done a triathlon. They'd have gone biking and swimming and running after they ate the cookies. They're potheads, unapologetically, that are crazy into fitness and jiu-jitsu and fighting. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, they're not sport fighters. They're not talking shit to promote fights like, you know, like what you see with McGregor. Like, they are gangster kids that love to fight. They until a couple of years ago, both of them still lived at home and their mom in Stockton in a little house.
I mean, they got a little bit bigger house in Stockton, yeah, but still not very big.
They're doing better now, but I mean, all the stuff that we see with McGregor and some of the others about their ability to talk is kind of manufactured and based on what made the Diazes popular. But they actually did it out of anger because they were not going to be friends with anybody they might have to fight.
Nate and Nick Diaz will talk shit to you during the fight.
They've been in multiple post-fight fights in the ring in Strikeforce and Elite FC and stuff like that because they were cornering somebody and
started talking shit to the other corner men and gotten fights in the middle of the cage on live TV.
Well, I was about to say, it's always questionable, like when one Diaz brother is fighting, if the other one's going to be allowed to be there due to either a prior suspension for jumping over the cage and fighting, or running into the cage and fighting, or failing a drug test.
And they're true brothers that got each other's back. And I mean, they are definitely two of the few left, like old, what you call old school guys that like love to fight. Do not look at this as like sport fighting. They look at this as a fight.
It's interesting because you look at, especially in Nate in his career. And I mean, he was the understudy, he was the younger brother. So all the hype was originally on Nick. And I mean, is it fair to say in the long run that Nate is the more, I mean, just say straight up successful in fighting of the two Diaz brothers? Has he had the better career?
I mean, he's got the Ultimate Fighter stuff, but I don't, when you go back, Nick was so long ago, I think that, I mean, he can be forgotten about, but he was, I mean, he beat KJ Nunes and beat Shamrock.
Beat Frank Shamrock, beat his ass.
I mean, the Frank Shamrock fight with Nick Diaz was an enormous fight, and he whipped his ass while telling him how he was doing
it. And that was on that Affliction card that we bought, right?
No, I think it was Elite XC.
Okay.
I think it was.
But they absorbed.
It might have been Strikeforce. It was either Strikeforce or Elite XC. One of those two. But
I had that one too.
It was Strikeforce. In fact, I'm thinking about it. It was definitely Strikeforce because that was Frank's last fight. He retired after, but I mean, and he just flat out said, like, I can't keep up with somebody like this. But I mean, Nick's got the huge, I mean, the KJ Nunes fight, they got stopped because he was just sliced to pieces. And then he comes back and, I mean, whips him in the rematch to win the belt. I mean, I don't know. I mean, both of them are so frustrating because they probably both jump into that BJ Penn category of unrealized talent. But both of them, because they made a couple million bucks, and they're like, okay, you're going to have to like make fighting sound really appealing for me to come back now.
That's what Nate's done, though.
Right.
When Nate choked out Conor McGregor, he made himself so much money.
Tons.
And it's like, and then if you're going to use that as a metric, that's when he surpassed his brother in what their MMA legacies will be. And that Conor fight made him so much money. And that's the thing. And you're starting to highlight a theme here that I want to jump into is if you get a Diaz brother there and they give a shit that night,
man,
they really give a shit. And they really gave a shit because, you know, they give a shit. These guys are notoriously, potheads or whatever. It's like they don't shortcut training.
For sure.
They train and they fight. And they spar and they roll and they train. It's where's his head's going to be the night of the fight.
Yep. They independently, I mean, both of them, it's so weird how alike they are. I mean, I know brothers and training together, but people go different ways. Both of them have some of the most beautiful combat jujitsu. Like I'm talking about MMA jujitsu in the game. And both of them have some of the prettiest range boxing in the game too. That's so efficient the way they do it. And when they can pair those two things together, I mean, both of them in between there don't do a lot of wrestling, but they're actual MMA jiu-jitsu, and then they're just, you know, nice little 4-ounce glove boxing where they're just jabbing and putting pressure on people. I mean, it's beautiful, but both of them do.
So the odds on this fighter would draw me in.
Yeah.
Look, Nate Diaz is fighting Leon Edwards. It's a 5-round. They've given it a co-main designation on a card that's already got two title fights. And Leon Edwards is a heavy, heavy favorite at minus 650. Nate Diaz is a very, very attractive underdog. Currently, he's up as high now as plus 400.
I've got it. Yeah, seating plus 400. Yeah, that's huge.
Let's talk about Leon for a minute.
Yes, please.
Now, he's coming off a fight involving an illegal eye poke with another gentleman that's fighting on this card in Bilal Muhammad.
Yep.
What's your take on Leon Edwards?
Leon Edwards hasn't lost a fight since 2015 when he lost a decision to Kamaru Usman.
Right.
Okay, you take that away. I mean, and he hasn't lost since 2014. Leon Edwards has been for a few years now. I mean, I liken it to what we used to say about Conor McGregor. It's when people come up with Conor, it was like, well, yeah, he won that last fight, but is he that good? And, oh, well, the next fight he's going to lose. People have been doing that to Leon Edwards for a while, and it's tough to – somehow Leon Edwards has been a killer for the last 6 years without necessarily fighting the number one people. I don't know how much of that is Leon Edwards' fault. The people he has fought, including the fight before Muhammad was Rafael Dos Anjos. I mean, he's been hurting people. So it's just, I don't know if we've seen it against competition yet, the right competition, but Leon Edwards might be the best 170-pound fighter in the world. We don't know just because we haven't seen him against them, but the people he has fought, he hurts people.
Do you think Nate Diaz is competition to him?
I think that Nate Diaz is competition for anyone. My fear in this fight is, I mean, Nate Diaz he gets punched in fights. He takes them, he wears them well. He wears out people by making them move from his punches, but also making them throw punches. Leon Edwards is a guy that if he connects, I mean, this is so similar to the Masvidal kind of setup where there's some power there. And if you're going to let that guy hit you, it's how many can you take? I don't know if he can miss enough of Edwards' punches while waiting on Edwards to get tired from the volume that he puts out. I mean, that's the great debate here is Edwards is going to have pressure on him from volume and Diaz is going to have some serious power coming back. And we're just going to see, I mean, which one of them gets there first.
I feel like, and I went back and, you know, was doing a little looking around to confirm my suspicions. Diaz has 2 5-round fights in his career. Edwards has 2 5-round fights in his career. I'm biased towards the Diaz.
Yeah, the Dos Anjos and the Cerrone fight, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And, I feel like they always come with cardio, and he's going to throw so many punches, and it's going to give, I mean, if Edwards doesn't get to him early.
Yeah.
Do you think Edwards has a possibility to tire out?
I think Edwards has two rounds. I mean, somewhere in that third round, he's got to really have Diaz hurt. And I'm not hurt, sorry. Finished. If he's going to exhaust himself over two and a half rounds, and if Diaz is still there, I don't care how hurt or cut Diaz is, he's going to have the cardio to keep moving forward. And, I mean, you're basically going to end up having somebody. I don't see a way this goes to a 5-round decision. I think that if Diaz weathers the storm, he wears Edwards out before we get to a 5-round decision.
Wow. Okay.
I can't see Edwards living through the volume. That Diaz. We talk about the Dos Anjos fight. I mean, Dos Anjos was tired, but like he's not putting out near the volume that someone like Diaz is going to put.
You think that if you don't see this going to decision either way, and that's a really interesting take because as I look, I want to say the over under in rounds on this fight is set at 4.5, and over 4.5 is the favorite. And in fact, if I look a little bit closer, I can tell you for sure. Over 4.5 rounds is +105. Under 4.5 rounds is the favorite at -135.
Yeah, I'm taking that under for sure on that one.
And the bookies agree with you.
Yeah, I always with these fights, I look to, kind of go into what's the each person's best way to win. I think Edwards is finishing by landing a big punch that leads to the end of the fight in the first two rounds. Diaz is probably somewhere around 3.5 rounds, just shutting Edwards down, like where his body just can't keep up anymore.
You make me feel confident in my pick. Because
How do you feel about ring rust?
With the Diaz, I don't think it matters.
Okay.
I really don't.
In general, do you think it matters? And this is a little different because these guys have been fighting so long.
You're talking about guys got 50 professional fights.
Yeah.
In Diaz. So it's almost a good thing that, especially as he gets older. Dude, look. I mean, this is an extreme example. Look at fucking Chuck Liddell.
Yeah.
It was like after his button got pressed, over.
Yeah.
He was over. He was out like a nightlight the clap, and you'd go clap, clap. Somebody would land a glancing punch upon Liddell's noggin, and he was out. And that was just easy example that you point to of a guy taking too much damage, CTE, whatever it may be. Diaz has fought a lot. Nate has fought a lot. Nate has 50 professional fights. I think the fact that he has not fought since 2019 works in our favor here.
But Nate has, he's 20-12.
32 fights.
Yeah.
Did I say 50?
You did say 50.
I said 50 like three times.
Was there 50 grams in your?
This is what happens when we bring a good, solid information.
Have a third cookie and let's do another hour.
This is what happens.
They'll have 1,000 fights by the time we're done.
This is what happens. So I'm so glad you're here. It's been the missing ingredient the whole time. Facts have been what we've been missing. Now we got a guy that's got facts. The picks are about to take off. It's or something. Hello. I like Diaz. I like Diaz +400. Yeah. It is the single greatest piece of gambling advice that I've ever given out on this podcast. Diaz +400.
Where does that come from? I mean, it's the people making the lines. It'd be one thing if the people making the lines, just got started in MMA a year ago and don't even know who the hell Nate Diaz is because he hasn't fought in a couple years.
Wesley,
does that come from? +400.
They have fucking Edwards is -650.
I mean, Edwards is worse going the other way. Would he be more than that if they were throwing him in with Usman? I mean, how does Diaz become that large of an underdog against any 170-pound fighter? That's enormous.
Dude, it's like when that really hot Australian chick fought the lioness. It was like the last fight of the tattooed hot Australian chicks. And that still happens in women's MMA today, where it's like, oh, we're literally going to do some WWE shit where this lady's good looking. Sure. She should. I mean, nobody should have commissioned that fight.
No.
And you, at one point, Nunes was +800.
Yep.
-800. And I jumped all over it. I jumped all over -800 like a maniac. Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
But I knew it was going to happen. And this, -650 to Edwards +400. It has all the ingredients. I know it sounds wacky. Gunn doesn't know what the fuck. This is value.
Yes.
This is value. Diaz +400 is fucking value. I'll tell you what's not value. Edwards at -650?
No.
That's ridiculous.
Nobody's betting on that, right?
They've been driving it up. People have been betting it because that's why it's going up. Diaz opened this week at plus, I saw him at plus 365. He's gone up as a bigger underdog at a plus 400. And I'm not afraid to wait till after, I mean, I'm going to wait till after weigh-ins, but I mean,
are you worried that this is like all everybody's trying to drive it up and they're waiting till weigh-ins to bet on Diaz and it's going to drive it back down?
No, I don't think the rest of the world thinks like me.
Then Floyd Mayweather drops $500,000 on Nate Diaz and screws the whole line
before the fight. Dana White puts $3 million on. Yeah. Y'all act like that's never happened. Y'all act like that doesn't happen.
That's a dude that's literally banned from multiple casinos in Vegas from playing blackjack.
Uh huh. Yeah.
It's just, yeah, multiple casinos in Vegas have banned the owner of the UFC because he won too much money playing blackjack at their casino. Yeah, he knows something.
I love it. We've also got a fight on this card, Damian Maia versus Bilal Muhammad. Maia is the underdog, plus 185, Muhammad minus 245. You got anything on that?
I mean, I think we're getting to the end of the Damian Maia career.
Right.
It's a rough fight. Damian Maia's ugly wrestling. He's found a way to like take some damage while getting people to the ground and then taking their back and choking them. This is an ugly fight for him. I don't know why at this age, Damian Maia, he's 43 now.
Does he need the money?
No, I'm not saying he should retire and stop fighting, but Bilal Muhammad, this pairs up to be an ugly fight. I mean, you can't ever just throw Damian Maia out the window. If he grabs your back, I mean, he's choking whoever the hell he grabs.
Right.
This is
world-class jiu-jitsu.
He's not going to land a phantom strike on Muhammad that puts him down to where he jumps on his back, and he's not out wrestling Bilal. This is just I feel bad in this fight about Damian Maia, and I have quite a bit of confidence in Bilal Muhammad winning it.
Probably a better. You think Muhammad at minus 245 is a better value than Stylebender at minus 275?
Definitely.
That's where you got to go. You put your money. See, everybody wants to go after that big flashy fight with the big flashy name. I'm with you, but how fun is it to hit some bets early in the fucking pay per view?
And then you're just waiting.
Just not even like, I'm not even gonna fuck with the main event.
Yep.
I mean, after Diaz, I'm just gonna be counting this money, dude.
Oh, I mean, yeah. And then you got two more fights to go after that, and you're just relaxing and really enjoying the last two fights after you hit that Diaz one.
I'll hit the Diaz one. I'm gonna hit Bilal Muhammad too. Minus 245. All right.
I like it.
You got anything else on this card that jumps out at you?
No, I mean, it's so far down the card, but they're talking about the Lauren Murphy, Joanne Calderwood fight, maybe leading to who's going to challenge Shevchenko next. And if I'm either one of those girls, I don't want to win this fight because Shevchenko's a murderer, and neither one of these girls needs to be fighting her.
You know, there's a way that you used to be able to make some pretty easy money with UFC lines. That's kind of feels like it's gone away in the last year and a half.
Yep.
But I used to have a lot of success with it. Just always betting the rounds over.
Yes.
If it were like two nondescript women fighters.
Yep.
And that used to come in all the time. And it's one of those things where UFC, relatively speaking, against all these other sports, it's only been around for 20, 25 years. So it's like Vegas has only been taking shots at it for that long. And you used to be able to just go like a fight like this immediately comes to mind. Go, oh, just about the, I mean, I don't think JoJo's stopping Lauren Murphy. And I don't think Lauren Murphy's stopping Joanne Calderwood.
Agreed.
Vegas is so smart now. Over 2.5 rounds is minus 365.
I know me and you talked about before, but that's where I try to put something there once in a while on some sort of crazy parlay and do well. That's worked for me pretty good earlier this year.
Who would you parlay Nate Diaz with? So if you're the parlay guy, you know, a plus 400 is a nice foundation to build a parlay off of.
It is. I mean, that's what I was wondering. I'm like, you start putting stuff together there, and I
bet a hundred bucks and pay the mortgage. You know,
man, you can get some serious money there. Going through a couple of those, you get to. I mean, and it really doesn't matter if you're pairing him with a favorite or an underdog. Anything you parlay him with, I mean, just gets into bonkers numbers.
Yeah. Diaz is the fight, man.
Yeah.
Diaz is, I really feel good about that one. Dude, you're getting to bet on it. He's a fun guy to root for. If you've never bet on a Diaz before, if you've never rooted for Nate Diaz before, put 20 bucks on him and have some fun. Who knows?
I imagine the weigh-ins are going to be a little intense between the two of them. And so we'll build some animosity going into the fight there. And again, there's two title fights after that fight. Like that's a big high to hit and kind of have a big energy dump and then turn around like, oh my God, I got two more 5-round fights.
It's so funny. UFC always sets out to do one thing with cards and then fucking life happens, you know? And so it's really like, it's hard to predict what's going to be a good card, what's not going to be a good card. How does a card, because Diaz was supposed to fight weeks ago.
Yes.
You know, I went and watched Oliveira versus Chandler at a sports book, and they had a poster out and it had Diaz and Edwards was on the poster. Because they were supposed to fight that night, you know, but or the people that make the posters have been eating the same cookies I have. I don't know.
Or man. That. I mean, that was going to be his 51st career fight. He had to put
51st,
it off.
51st
career. He had to put it off for a few weeks.
You fucking facts. You believe in aliens?
You mean like people from other countries that live here?
No, I mean like extraterrestrials, like intelligent life.
I haven't seen one. If that's, I wouldn't say that I believe or disbelieve. I'm kind of.
You think they're real?
I mean, sure. I'll go with yes. I think there are people that. I think there are some sort of beings on some other planet in our universe.
Smart guy.
I do believe that.
July 10th, we've got a big mega fight to say the least. I mean, is this the most exciting fight on the horizon? Is this the biggest hype fight? Is this going to be the biggest fight of the year until it's not? July 10th in Vegas. It's in Vegas, right? Am I correct in that, Wesley? Okay. Dustin Poirier.
The UFC 227?
I think it's actually they're going to have one between now and it's 220. It's 228.
It's 264.
264.
Yeah.
It's these numbers that I don't have written down. The number's not written down, it's a problem, you know?
Yeah.
No, you don't. You don't know that.
Oh, man.
So, Dustin Poirier in the third fight of their series. Yeah, McGregor obviously won the first. Poirier knocked him out in the second fight. Boy, that was a spirited half a round they got in, huh?
It was good, and then like great beautiful fight for Poirier from Lafayette.
Everybody loves Poirier, you know. Man, Louisiana.
He's hard to not like. He's the he's what you would like a lot of professional athletes to act like, and I don't know him at all, but it appears to be real.
He's a good dude. He went on the week leading up to the second McGregor fight. He was doing press, and for him, he went on Theo Von's podcast. Theo Von's a Louisiana guy, a prominent podcaster, and you know, he was so honest. He's like, I'm 32 years old. I just signed a 6 or 7 fight contract. He's like, I don't like doing this.
Yep.
I don't want to get my head fucking bashed in for the rest of my life. I'm going to fight these 6 fights. I'm going to make as much hay as I can. I'm going to fight as good as I can. And then I'm done. and I want to spend time with my family. And then he goes out and beats McGregor. And then he could have fought for the belt. He could have fought for the belt. And I think he made the smart and right. And honestly, in these days, it's like it's the virtuous decision when you have a finite number of rounds and fights and punches absorbed to your face in you, that he took the money fight. He took the rematch with McGregor.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think it's a incredibly smart decision, what he did. And it's the belt's not going anywhere. The belt will exist on somebody's waist. McGregor may not exist. McGregor, I mean, if he didn't fight Poirier, then maybe he's stepping in to fight Diaz. And if he loses to Diaz, like, how much? I mean, at what point does he lose value? This is what Poirier needs to do to, one, I mean, he gets this, finishes this off, never has to talk about McGregor again, and then he will be the next person challenging for the belt.
Because it feels like he could have walked right into the belt and won the belt.
Yep. And then the McGregor, during that time while you're getting the belt, the McGregor fight goes away forever, possibly.
Right. Get the money.
100%.
Go get the money. And then you say, you know, what's funny is the experts think they saw enough of McGregor in his defeat last fight to make him a very ever so slight favorite at minus 120 with Poirier being minus 110. And I mean, it's not a disrespectful line, but there's enough there that you can go, okay, I am the underdog.
After
putting this guy to sleep.
Yeah, and I mean, McGregor landed a few punches, but Poirier owned that fight, and it looked like if the fight hadn't been finished there, it was going to be a really tough fight for McGregor, who wasn't going to be able to walk, you know, or stand up for a while. And that fight just happened. I get it that McGregor is a smart guy and does good with distance and all, but what's going to be different? Like I don't know. This isn't. I don't know. I just don't understand what's not to like about Poirier here. If there was another year and a half between the fights and we had a few different things, but I think it was a bad idea for McGregor to ask for this fight immediately, and I think it was really smart of Poirier to take it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly the odds makers feel like they saw something in that first round before he got knocked the fuck out.
Yep.
As a Poirier fan watching that fight on the edge of my seat, I was like, oh shit, Connor is fucking swinging.
Yes.
Your boy is in danger of an instant night. And then it went the other way.
Yeah.
And he did the instant night to McGregor. But I mean, it's going to be electric again, man. You know that. It's worth the hype. You know, it's worth being fight of the summer, you know, UFC's big tentpole event. I mean, it's the third fight. It's a dynasty of this trio of fights. I mean, there's so much. Again, we're biased. Everybody loves Poirier. Poirier is the best, you know. I'm with you. I think he does it again.
That the McGregor-Aldo fight, and that's a crazy crowd when McGregor's fighting. Like, that's going to be really hyped. It'll even be fun on TV. Like, it's nice having crowds back at UFC fights when the fights are going that way and getting all exciting and the crowd's getting into it and pumping the fighters up. But, it's going to be raucous there in Vegas.
We picked Poirier on this podcast last time, and the reason given was that he was hungrier.
Yeah.
You know, once you got 30, 60 million in the bank like McGregor does, and not to say that Poirier is a pauper, that he's a poor guy, but I think he's the hungrier fighter at this stage of their careers.
I
think he does it again.
I agree. And not just money based. Poirier was, there's a different, when people lose after not losing for a while, there's something that it can do to them. Poirier was not
like mentally defeated after losing to Khabib. Poirier didn't like losing. And Poirier like came out of that fight. Like, I know that was a tough fight the way he prepared for it and going over there, but he came out of that fight looking like, I never want to lose another fight again. And he's before that fight, he was
one of the greatest, runs in UFC history with knocking out four, former champions what he's done since then is still on a good run. And I think that I don't know if he's ever going to forget. He's one of those guys that probably isn't going to forget where he came from, but he's also not going to forget the trials and tribulations and how it felt to lose. And I that's just not a guy I see taking shortcuts. And I don't know if we can, as MMA fans, I'm not sure how much we can trust that McGregor's going to always put in the work that actually is required to be successful at the top level of the sport. I just don't know if we'll ever see it again from him, which is sad.
Lost to Nate Diaz.
Yeah. Got slapped. Got the Stockton slap on him.
You got the Stockton. They got the Stockton choked out.
The last, real quick on Poirier. Did you ever watch Fightville, the documentary that came out in 2011?
Dude, I've watched it so many times.
It's so cool because they never intended on Poirier actually being a star of that show.
They never did.
They were following Tim Crater around, and there was some other guy at the gym, and then they're like, who's this guy over here? He's kind of cool. And like, they just kept like this, accidentally started following him with the camera because he was talented, and goes and beats up a guy in the fight. And like, that's 10 years ago. But he was an absolute nobody.
Right.
At that
right.
time.
And he was
accidentally gets discovered on a documentary that was a nothing documentary about Tim Crater.
One of the funny things hearing him talk about it today is he'll say, like, when they were filming that documentary, he's like, they followed me around for 2 years.
Yeah.
And so you think something like that, they would say, dress for success, Go get the job that you want. Dude, he got followed around by cameras for 2 years. That makes him a better personality, a better champion today. He's not been a champion yet at the UFC level. It's coming. But, it's an amazing part of
it. He was an interim champ, right?
He was an interim champ. Yeah, he was one of those. I wouldn't say he's won the UFC belt yet.
He didn't either. He's not the person that would stand on that saying that he...
Right. Dude, it was a good UFC talk. I am so excited to have such a knowledgeable UFC guest. You want to talk about the NBA real quick?
Yeah.
All right. So, NBA bets are obviously pretty time-sensitive bets, so I want to talk about some larger scheme things. On this show, we come out every now and then with new ideas. Had a new idea recently for a bet that involves charity. If you're going to make a wager, put the same amount towards charity. And I did the first ever mentally ill lock of the week, taking the Nets back when in the, just during the playoff play-in games, actually, of the NBA, current NBA playoffs, at plus 250 to win it all.
Okay.
Today, odds on the overall NBA champion, the Nets are the clear favorite at minus 140.
Yeah, those last two games have them a lot of people's favorite.
They look like the heir apparent. If you had taken the Nets when I told you to take the Nets, you'd have got them at plus 250. Last week, they were at plus 150. Today, they're minus 140. The Nets line to die, just to give you an idea, no context because the pod will already have been released. The Nets were getting 4.5 points when the lines opened this morning, and their game three, when they've decimated the Bucks in games one and two, both games without Harden. The Bucks are getting 4.5 points tonight. It's been bet down to 3.5. I'm taking the Nets money line tonight. I think the Nets are going to win it all. The Nets are now to win the East. Minus 350. It's like, it's not even worth your money to bet on the Nets winning the East at this point. And really, it feels like the Nets are going to shut everybody out on the overall championship. You got a different take than that? You think anybody else got a shot here?
No, I mean, that's a tough they're going to be a really, really tough out if everybody's staying healthy and what they're doing. I mean, the Bucks were the hard matchup for them that everybody was interested in. And at least in the first two games, the Bucks there's a different level from what the Nets are doing.
Over in the West, it's fascinating. You know, Dallas, obviously your home fan of Dallas. Dallas is an extremely talented basketball team. And Dallas put the Clippers down 2-0 and eventually lost in seven. But I feel like they took a pound of flesh out of the Clippers.
Yeah, I think that makes them easier prey for the Jazz. I mean, they're already down 1-0 going into tonight.
The Clippers are an example. There's like two fascinating subplots going on in the NBA playoffs one right now. One is Marv Albert, the legendary broadcaster, is out of his fucking mind. He's either senile or on drugs or both, right? And they've already announced his retirement. This is going to be his last ride. Marv Albert's last ride. Right. And then
can we make it Jeff Van Gundy's last ride too?
Nope. Sorry. He's got one more ride in him after this one. Unfortunately, unfortunately it doesn't apply to Jeff, but, so you're getting like eight or nine more Marv games potentially. Right. And so I enjoy everyone because he's a lunatic. And this is one of those rare things. Like when the last days of Harry Carey was a fantastic listen.
Yeah.
You know, you get home from class or college, you get home from class, open up a six pack and start watching Cubs games on WGN. Listen to that crazy motherfucker. You know, Marv Albert's got that thing going on. We're going to miss Marv when he's gone. He's a throwback. He's out of his mind. He's insane. That's a big thing to look for in these NBA playoffs and have a good time watching them. The second big thing is just how horribly inept of a coach Ty Lue is.
He looks so confused no matter what's going on.
They need to just let Rondo coach the team. You know, Rajon Rondo, it's always fun to predict what current players are going to go on to be great coaches. Rajon Rondo is going to be a legendary NBA coach. He should be coaching this fucking team. He should be in a player coach role instead of Ty Lue being in charge.
You think that they could go back? Will they keep Doc Rivers?
I don't know what they do, man. It's one of those things where it almost feels like it was the player's decision to bring in Lue.
I mean, Ty Lue did lead LeBron to a championship in Cleveland. Right. I mean,
they came in like halfway through the fucking season. Yeah. They're like, here, put on this suit. Let's go. it was, yeah, exactly. Yeah, for half a year. He's horrible. You know, the odds on favorites to win the West now are the Jazz at -140. And what I think is the more intriguing value pick, the Suns at +150.
I don't trust the Suns because I don't trust Chris Paul's health.
Well, Chris Paul looked like shit in the opening round because he was very injured.
Yes.
And they still managed to take out the Lakers. And they did. And Chris Paul has convincingly took out the Lakers.
Yeah.
Chris Paul, I've been watching basketball every night. Chris Paul has come back into form. Chris Paul ain't hurt anymore.
Yeah.
Chris Paul had like 18 points and 13 assists last
night. Yep.
You know, fact check that. It's wrong. It's close.
I'm going to call some numbers. 17 and 15.
Hey! 32 is the total, right? I had the total at 31 because that's how I think. I think in totals because there was a bet. involved.
But the night before, he was 21-11 too. So I mean, he's playing.
He's back. He's in it. He's raring to go. Playoff Chris Paul. You know, I feel like the Nets are going to win it overall. You know, there's still a little bit of value. I think if you take the Nets now at -140 to win it all, the East, there's no point in even doing a futures bet on the East. You do in the West, you have the Jazz at -140 and the Suns +150. I'm all about the Suns taking the West. It's looking like a Nets Suns finals, according to me. So, Wesley, that's all I've got, man.
Like it.
Do you have anything else for us?
No, I think that NBA is interesting. Well, I think that it's going to take – somebody's going to have a shortened series in the West and get some rest while Brooklyn has to be able to fight for the East. I mean, the only thing I think that you might be able to give them is tired just because they're so top-heavy.
Yeah.
But I don't see it. I don't see Brooklyn having a 6 or 7-game series against anybody right now.
Mm-mm. No. I mean, I almost jumped on. You could bet that Brooklyn will win this current series versus the Bucks 4-0 prior to tip off game 3. You could get that at +350, which I'm already a little invested in the Nets tonight, and I don't want to, you know, I didn't want to leverage myself more in that way, but
for sure.
That's a good one. Dude, if you've made it through this much of the podcast, I want to share with you my favorite moment in Dome Patrol podcast history. All right. Have you been a Dome Patrol listener for any period of time?
I have.
Good. Do you remember that they used to have another guy on the show? His name was Damon.
I can't say that I do. I'm not going to lie to you and say yes.
They used to have another guy on the show. His name was Damon. Nice guy, interesting guy. The point of the story isn't to disparage him. He's actually a fucking fine human. I used to come on and guest. Used to come on and guest on the show over the years, right? And I would usually be pretty fucking blitzed when I came on. And many years ago, I think it was one of my first appearances on the show. You know, Jeff, Jason, and Damon, and it came out during the course of the conversation that Damon's day job was he worked at a drug testing lab. And this specific drug testing lab was the one that was responsible for drug testing Saints players. And it came out that Damon's job, part of his job, not his whole job, was to see the Saints players' dicks. That just blew my mind. I was done for the rest of, I was like, I could not get past that. This guy's job is to look at the Saints players' dicks. It's his fucking job.
That pay well?
I don't know. It's not the point of the story.
Was he a fan of the team before he got that job? Or did he become a fan of the team?
I think he was a fan. I think he was a fan before the job.
I've got questions. I need answers.
That's where my head was that whole night. I was just doing the internal questions all over, and some questions ended up coming out vocally, but a lot I was just done. And that's my favorite in Dome Patrol. It's in the archive somewhere. I don't know. There's got to be. There's been a lot of episodes.
Just out of curiosity, would that be your second favorite moment in Dome Patrol history if Scott had gotten an LSU gymnast on the show? I mean,
Scott had gotten
down to second with a new leader in the clubhouse.
If Scott had gotten an LSU gymnast on the show, that'd have been the greatest moment in Dome Patrol podcast history. Now, and it was amazing. It's like sometimes, you see, I'm the kind of human being where I'm mentally broken. because they have me in chains. Like, I believe that there's things that I can't do, right? But like, if Elon Musk had said, "Hey, I'm going to build rockets to go to Mars," if he'd been too scared to say that we're going to build rockets to go to Mars, then we wouldn't be building rockets to go to Mars. You've got to be able to act upon crazy, outlandish ideas, outstanding ideas. And when Scott was like, "I'm getting an LSU gymnast on the podcast," I was like, "Of course, that's fucking great. That's how, like, yes, it's happening. Like, yeah, of course." And I was excited. And then reality put its fucking boot on her neck.
Does she know that she's not going to be allowed to do gymnastics anymore?
Yeah, there was emails. There was emails involved, I believe. You know, people send emails. They get copied on emails and stuff and whatnot. I think she was in the know. I think she might have been naive to the process prior to, because she had perhaps never been invited on a podcast before from like a... See, they want you to be a credentialed journalist because they're afraid that miscreants like us, Wesley, are going to get you on our podcast and not fill the agenda with what they want you to say and want you to do.
Next thing you know, you're sitting on a speaker in your living room listening to bassy music on a podcast.
I don't know what happens, but you're not allowed. You know, it's like they keep them in check, dude. They want the official establishment journalist.
Oh, yeah,
they're not. We're independent journalism, dude. They can't fuck. They don't. They want to be able to keep us down. Like, why can't I have, if Coach O wants to come on my show, why can't Coach O come on my show? Because I'm not credentialed.
He'd probably come on with the gymnast.
He'd sit on the speaker. And then he'd fucking eat it. He's a maniac. But that was my favorite moment in Dome Patrol podcast history.
So is this the official New Orleans Saints dick podcast of the Dome Patrol Network?
I don't think so. No, oh, okay. that ship has sailed. We don't have access to that kind of talent anymore. We don't have access to that kind of talent anymore. So, dude, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
I appreciate having you. We gotta want you to, before we go, I want you to say bye bye to all of the beautiful people listening to Taking the Over with Billy Gunn.
Bye to all the beautiful people and donkeys listening to Taking the Over with Billy Gunn.
And we're gonna see you guys again soon. Later, bye, have fun, be safe, wear your helmet, love you, gone.